Many newspapers have called it the greatest club game ever. The strength of Munster rugby has always been the big boys up front.
I'm actually really, really excited for it.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the rugby channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
12 seasons with Dublin, debut in 2010, 8 All-Irelands between 2011 and 2020. Kevin McMenamin has announced his retirement from Inter-County football. He joins us now. Kevin, hello. Great to have you on.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, good to be here.
No, it's great to have you. 12 seasons, 8 All-Irelands, 2010 to 2020 Dublin. That was pretty good timing.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. It was an epic decade or so, or 12 years, and loved every second of it.
This had been on your mind, I'm sure. Like, you're 35 very shortly, so, and I know you were at the Olympics last year. Today, happy birthday. It's all downhill from here.
Exactly.
And you were at the Olympics last year. So, it's not a shock when a 35-year-old retires. Were you tempted to give it another year, or was this coming for a long time?
Yeah, I was probably coming, yeah. This isn't ripping off the band-aid moment. It's happened in deathbed health and cuts. You know, it's been slow, so it was a tough decision to choose essentially my work and my future, I suppose, over Dublin last summer. I wasn't shooting the lights out. I was finding form a little bit difficult, slowing down a little bit. So yeah, look, that was probably it. When I went to the games, that was probably the end of it for me. I would have liked to maybe go again, but I found it hard to get to the level that's needed, you know, and I think I would have found it hard to play. I didn't play one game last year. I think I played 7 minutes in 2020 in the championship. So, like, I kind of think if I'm going to be there, I'd need to be contributing a bit more than 7 minutes, or hoping I'd get, like, last year was kind of hoping I'd come right and I'd play in the semis or a final, you know, and it wasn't enough for me to forego the opportunity of, traveling the world with the Irish boxers. It was a fairly epic 8 weeks. It turned out to be Paris and then 6 weeks in Tokyo, but so that was kind of when the decision started, I guess.
Can you remember moments where you started to realise the body was slowing down?
Yeah, like a couple of times, particularly this year in the club, I got a few little niggles that I hadn't been getting before. Last year, 2020, like, I didn't start one or two games in training, you know, for the second team. And that's kind of that's a warning sign, you know. It's hard to survive that, you know. So I remember one particular night I didn't start and I was fuming. I remember open DCO, I wanted to boot the fence down. I was so angry. But look, these are just, they're all little signs that, listen, you're just not at the standard anymore and stuff like that. You know, don't get me wrong. I feel like once I get my form, particularly in the summer, the 2020 season didn't suit me, the El Muck, you know, I think I'd a little bit slicker on the, you know, in the summer, but little times like that, I guess. This year, once or twice, we had a couple of games I played this year, behind, like, you know, friendlies and stuff, and I just wasn't, just a little bit slower and turn over the ball a bit more. And it's just, and then you could, then what happened, the problem is then you come out in a training and you score 1-4 and you're like, I'm the man again, you know, but it's consistency gets tougher, I think, as you get older.
So have you lost a lot of pace? Would Kevin McMenamin of 2017 burn 2021 version over 30 yards now?
Potentially, yeah. Like, I've changed a lot. I noticed, like, this year with the club, I was kind of a totally different role, playing out around the middle a lot more and trying to use my head rather than my body. But have I lost pace? I probably have a little bit, yeah.
I guess sports people die twice. So in retiring, you get to have a little glimpse of your obituary. And when that time comes, many, many, many decades off into the future, I think we can safely say the goal against Kerry in the 2011 All-Ireland final is going to be shown. That was the one which popped up and popped into everybody's mind. 64 minutes gone, 4 points down. Do you remember that moment now as you saw it in your head? Or have you just seen it so many times on television that you remember the TV version?
The answer to that is I have a kind of a screenshot in my head kicking the ball, if that makes sense. I don't remember getting it or anything, you know, but I have a kind of a screenshot of kicking it. I remember we were kicking the day before, me and Mossy Quinn, and he told me to keep, he says, you lift your head too early when you're shooting for goals. He says, keep your head over it, keep it down. He's staying for the goal line. That was my memory of it. So I'm going to have this little screenshot like you have on your phone of this, like, I can still picture it now of the head down and just seeing it going into the Hill 16. And it was, Yeah, look, it's a lovely memory. It's mad. I feel like I'm a different it's a different person nearly that scored that goal. But I was proud to have had that, been that part of that game, and then obviously the decade since.
Were you conscious of an angry Bernard Brogan saying, "Pass me the ball"?
Not really, no. No.
Head down.
I was conscious of a Mark O'Shea might come and tackle me, but I wasn't conscious of a Bernard Brogan, no.
Not everyone, for whatever reason, even elite players, necessarily rise to the occasion or can deliver on big moments. Now, you seem to have a knack of doing that. Who knows as to why? I did see an interesting comment from you. And it was interesting because I would associate you with delivering in big moments, which is a great thing to be able to say about a sports person. But you had said that before you'd met a sports psychologist in 2010, you would have found the bigger days tougher and you wouldn't have necessarily delivered on the bigger days. So that's a hell of a changeover from pre-2010 to what you did in 11.
Yeah. And do you know what I actually, maybe not that I was misquoted, but you are right. I found it difficult, particularly at inter-county level. But growing up, I had a kind of a track record of playing well in finals and, you know, like man of the match in big games and performing. But I think that extra step just was a bit of a, I don't know, it was just an extra level out of my comfort zone. And I kind of questioned myself a lot. But I don't know if I'd call myself a big moment, because at the time they're not moments, it's a history that makes them the moments, like, do you know what I mean? So 2011 isn't a moment unless, you know, Kev Nolan kicks the ball over, or Bernard Brogan, or, you know, Eamon Fennell wins a throw in, or Klucko kicks the ball over the, do you know what I mean? So it's history, it's time then that makes them the moments. But I loved the clutch part of games. Like I just loved that competitiveness game down to the wire. Like, you know, I was in a game at Astro last night, me and my brother playing against each other, and like it was like level at 1 minute to 10, like, and we're both nailing each other trying to go for the win, like, you know. And I guess I just love that's the part of sport that I think I love the most, just the competing and it's a physical thing, but there's the chess match as well. And I'm kind of waffling a bit, but again, I think that's the bit that I love, you know.
No, that makes total sense. Kind of an interesting thing, Mossy saying that to you about keep your head down. Did you have to work very hard at the skills of the game? Obviously, it would have a degree of it comes very naturally to you, or you're not anywhere near a Dublin panel. But would you have improved as a player across the 2010s?
I think so. Yeah. I was reflecting this the other day. Physically, it was probably the first few years I did a lot of work on under Gilroy. Probably next was technical. I started doing a lot of wall sessions. Up in Jude's had the wall up there, and I was bring the two balls up and did a lot of work on me finishing and stuff like that. And then later on in the career, actually, as I'm speaking now, it became more tactical that I started trying to figure out the game. And then the fourth one is, I suppose, mindset. And that was a constant that I loved learning about and had a challenge to get better at. And look, that became my biggest strength, I think, by the end of my career, you know. Although I found it hard last year in 2020, I found it hard mentally, just when you're not contributing as much, you know, you don't get as much change out of it. I found it hard to be as disciplined, but certainly I was able to stay. I learned to stay, you know, calm when it mattered, I suppose, you know.
Yeah. And Kev, what's a wall session then? Is grabbing possession, jink the other way, and then hit a target, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, like we've a spot up in Jude's that we had, like, and there's loads of targets on the wall. You mean two balls. You're just imagining scenarios where you're get the ball off here and you have to finish it, or you'll have someone with you calling out. You know, we used to have numbers on the goal, you know, like 1 to 9 were different squares of the goal. So if they say 9, that's where you got to go bottom right, or little things like that, just to get you thinking a little bit more accurate, a little bit better kicking. Did a lot of work probably on shooting stuff like that, and yeah, trying to get a bit more a little bit more accurate. And
I'd say, and working on the boat feed, I'd say that made a huge difference. I'd say you could feel the benefits of that almost instantly.
Well, it's the one thing that it really, and Jim was very good at it, and he did a lot of work. Mick Bone would have been there with us in the first few years under Jim's regime and did a lot of skills work. And I think I just got a bit slicker, you know. Better ball, you know, less. You could run out for a ball with a cornerback, you know, running beside you with a fist under your arm trying to punch the ball out, and you just get better at controlling the ball and protecting it. You get better at, you know, nearly, taking tackles and not spilling the ball. You know, a little bit more accurate, less turnovers from sloppiness or spilling their foot passing and stuff. And it's just all being a bit tidier. So I love that. I loved when you improve on something, you feel great going into games. You're like, listen, I've done the work on my skill. You know what I mean? So
Because I remember listening to Paul Flynn. I think he was talking on Second Captains, and it was in advance of some game. And he made such an interesting point, which hadn't occurred to me really before. He was saying, running with the ball at club level, you can do serious damage if you're good at running with the ball. He said, inter-county level, so much easier against better players to get swallowed up and get into all sorts of trouble. So, you know, I would associate you a little bit with running with the ball. You got to be damn good at doing that, or you're going to cough up possession, and it looks awful.
Yeah, and I coughed up a fair bit out in my time, but no, that's fair. That's fair. But
you could do it.
Yeah, I suppose that was always one of the things that I really liked about the game, just getting taken, and that kind of was moved from the game a lot, particularly for inside forwards. Later on in the decade, you became a sharpshooter and come around the loop rather than, you know, kicking a ball in, win the ball and take a guy on, tap it over the bar. So that was probably a bit of a shame. I would have loved to be taking guys on for my whole career, but this just wasn't. But I liked that. And I think that probably helped me separate myself a little bit from a lot. Like just players that I've played with that I'd say easily, like could have played more. Like I remember, like this fella, Connor McHugh, excellent footballer. And I used to always be going head to head with him for me spot late on in my career, kind of. I tended to get the nod because I had that bit of something different. And there was players like Costello and Dean Rock who could, you know, wear that sharpshooter. So it was nice. I think I got an extra couple of years maybe on the field because, I was just a little bit different than unorthodox.
Well, it changes the pattern. I mean, and look, it probably ties in with the dreaded super sub tag, but it's a lovely option off the bench. If you put yourself in the position of a manager and it's round the corner stuff and patience and possession. If I look at the bench and I've got someone who can totally change it up by running directly at them, I can see how managers would say, well, let's throw that in there and see how the defense reacts to that all of a sudden. And probably did pay dividends in the last 20 minutes of lots of games.
And I think probably it at times I might have lost out on selection, 50-50s, for that reason. But
yeah, did you get a run of being starter for a number of years?
Yeah, like I would have, and in my first probably apart from Jim's first year, I'd say for my first 7 years, I started most of the game, most league games and most Leinster games. I kind of had I didn't start much championship under Pat. But by the time Jim came around, I started particularly 2014. I had a good Leinster. I had a poor quarter final against Monaghan and I was dropped. 2015, I had a good Leinster. I was dropped, I think, for the quarter final against Fermanagh. So for all the knockout games, 2016 was probably my best season. I started, I think, every game that year. I had a shoulder injury. I missed the start of the league and it did me the world of good. I had loads of energy and I only came back in about mid-March. And I was able to, play a lot more in championship. So I suppose I did have a run. I don't know the breakdown between off the bench and starting or whatever. But
How did you find that? Because I think that's a tough fringe to operate on. Take the 12, 13 lads who have a fair idea, I'm going to start pretty much every game. That takes a huge amount of stress, worry, energy draining kind of thoughts out of that. They don't have to think about that. Whereas Kev McMenamin, it sounds like for a lot of his career, approaching a lot of big games, is whether he wants to or not thinking, am I in? Am I out? Am I in? Am I out? Did I play well at training tonight? Didn't. Is that going to affect me? God, what's he thinking? Did he look at me funny? What's going on?
There's a bit of that internal chatterbox going on. And look, it is what it is. That's the role I played. And look, I took a lot of pride in it. I liked it. I liked being that being that player on the team, would have liked to play more as you know, we all would. But look, it is what it is. Maybe it got me an extra few games towards the end of my career.
Takes a mental strength to do it, though. Not everyone can do it. That's the thing.
Do you know what I'd say on that is, like, it was mainly under Jim, like, that, but I always felt that I was being fairly treated, is how I would put it. So there was a few games maybe where I felt this is unfair. I deserve to be playing in this game. But for the majority of the time, you know, on average, I wasn't maybe playing well enough. So it's not, Jim was very fair in how he selected the team. Nice. And as was Pat and Desi, but I guess the majority of this came under Jim, you know. I had a good relationship with Jim as well. You know, he was fairly straight up and honest with me. And it became a bit annoying towards the end. Yeah, you know, you're going to be finishing the game rather than starting.
Yeah, you're a finisher.
He
it's
said
great.
To me one day, you're going to finish this game. And I misunderstood him. And I thought I was starting and finishing.
I get the full 70.
Yeah, yeah.
Did that take on a rhythm of, I don't know, Friday morning on the way into work, you see the dreaded phone call from Jim Gavin, or would it be a word of training? Or maybe not, maybe after a while he didn't even bother with one-on-one chats.
Yeah, there probably was a bit of that going on over the years. Yeah, you know, he might have been different every season, but it is, yeah, that's just part of it, you know?
Yeah. So you said a really interesting thing there about how the game changed. And like, I mean, talk about timing. You think 2011, and I think of that Donegal game in the semi-final, and that's kind of a landmark day for how the game has changed. And from memory, I think you came on and kicked a point there, but that is a hell of an era to be inside forward those years post 11 with what Donegal were doing and how the game was changing. So give us your sense of that, because you must have been, and then probably watching the club scene change as well, and like everybody imitates what Donegal do. You must have been sitting inside the forward line at times thinking, this is bullshit. This is not the game I signed up for at all. So how did you adapt to that?
Yeah, we always probably, after we were beaten in 2014, like we didn't change much in the first few years, when it was only really Donegal and one or two Northern teams doing it. We didn't change too much. We didn't face a Northern team, I think, in knockout until 2016, maybe. We just got on with it. Like, again, we did a lot of work on it, on you know, learning to adapt our play. We were kind of a swashbuckling, you know, all attack, all out, and it worked. We played Donegal a few times, league games, and we just said, let's go man to man all over the park and see what happens. And it was a one way of counteracting. Now, we tried it in 2014 and they probably outfoxed us a little bit. We were a little bit naive, it's well documented.
Yeah.
As a forward, see, it's weird. At the time, you don't notice it changing too much. It's only when you look back and like, shit, like we used to have 3-on-3 inside and now we've got, you know, 6-on-10, you know, and it changes very quickly. But you just change very slowly and, you know, change your game. And I probably, yeah, instead of getting 5 chances to take on a guy in a game, it might now, maybe now it's only 2 or whatever it is. You love picking the lock as well. You love trying to prepare to outsmart the team and to beat them with your head, you know, with your smarts, rather than, you know, traditionally it was just kick and run and, you know, go at them. And you probably, a team's probably had 60, 70 possessions in a game back then, and whereas by mid-decade, end of the decade, it was probably down by 20-30%, where people were controlling the ball a bit more, you know.
Yeah.
So there's subtle changes, but I enjoy, I always loved it. We always kind of like treated it as a big challenge that we didn't want to see the country, because it was happening, you're dead right, it was happening in club teams. And I think there was a lot of, you know, it's very tempting to go, listen, we, for a club team, and I'm not picking anyone out, but like, say, you know, we conceded a lot last year, let's just go and drop everyone back and we'll try and keep it tight and catch them on a counter. Like, it's a bit,
it's an easy enough game plan to get bedded down pretty quickly, I guess, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's not working anymore, you know. Teams are figuring it out and you can see how slow the game has gone, like, you know.
So I guess this just seems like a very happy story, really. 12 seasons, a lot of success, teammates, and you all seem to love each other and have a great bond. Is there a highlight? Is there like a special memory? I'm sure there are lots, but it does seem like this was just great, because too often we talk about GAA and it's like, oh God, the commitment was so much and it was tough going. And, you know, people can play up the more difficult aspects, but it, God, I don't know. I think most people would give their right arm to get a 12 years like that. You know, it just seemed like a lot of fun. Yeah.
It's fair, yeah. Like, I suppose, yeah, that's true in many ways. It was very hard, like, you know, like, I it was part of a group that put in a lot of effort. The one thing I would say is that I put a bit too much of myself into it. Like, that's why I found it hard maybe to leave, because it did become a, you know, kind of an identity thing, that it was very much, this is who I was, you know, as much as I had loads of interest outside of sport, it was kind of always the anchor, you know. So just,
but I mean, it's a pretty good anchor. We all need some anchor. It's not a bad one.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. That's a fair point. But so look, it was. I've made some fantastic friends. Like, got to see three of the best leaders in the GAA work, and they're all different ways. And so many, made so many great friends and players and backroom staff. And it's been nice as well. And to, like, none of the players mentioned scoring a goal in a match, or, you know, when they gave me a call or a text or whatever. So, like, and that's something that I was, like, kind of proud of, because, like, it's like, you know, they might reference what you're like at training or what you're like as a teammate and stuff. And that's probably what's meant the most to me in the last few weeks, you know, that, you know, you did your bit when you, you know, when the sun was shining, you made hay, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So was that wasn't the highlight. I know that was your question. I probably had a number of highlights. Most of it was, you know, on training camps with lads, or maybe in the Crow Park dressing room, where there's just a feeling of accomplishment. And sometimes you just need to look at someone, you know, after a match and be like, see, we did it. We got through, like, big games. Obviously, it looked amazing feeling scoring big goals at Crow Park. It's electric. And, you know, 2016 was probably a good year. I was personally proud of being able to perform in big games. And, you know, I didn't get it. I got a chance as a sub, which I found obviously a bit easier, but it was nice that year to be able to, like, particularly the semi-final against Kerry, I was moving well and happy with how I played that day. And so there's some of the kind of key memories. But when it comes down to it, it's like the sing songs after down in the Lord Edward. I did a message from a teammate the other day, and we had a video of the two of us singing out, me and Paul Mannion singing A Rain Night. And so it was amazing, you know, some of those nights that, although he's not on my wish list at the minute, because he beat me in the county final a few weeks ago. But he's we've a good friendship, you know, myself and Paul, but a lot of the lads we were playing with, you know.
Yeah, I got that impression. When you say, so I mean, I didn't want to dismiss how all consuming it must be, for sure. And I get the point about it becoming like such a big part of your identity, because how could it not? Was there ever a point where you thought, God, the commitment here is borderline too much? Like, were we talking in one way or another 4, 5, 6, sometimes 7 days a week in terms of commitment and commitments?
I'd say some of my teammates would say yes. I never found it too much. There'd be seasons where you'd be like, oh, will the season ever end? Like, you know, even a couple of years with replays and stuff, where you're holding on for the, like, you kind of, you know the nature of it. You know it's 8 months or 9 months, and then you know you're getting your break, so you can kind of justify it. So I'd be a bit kind of worn out by the end of season sometimes, and it might have leaked in then, where I wasn't as committed to the club as I'd like to be. So a bit of that, but no, like, you know what, it just felt like we were on a journey, on a crusade. And it was, you know, I spoke to a fella this morning, a friend of mine who runs a fashion company, like, and he was talking about it can be all consuming at times, but it's great. It's very rewarding when you, you know, when you're getting places, when you're moving and you're accomplishing stuff, it can be very rewarding as well, even though it's like, there's a sweet spot there as well.
Yes.
Between burning out, you know?
Because I thought it was very interesting. You said maybe one of your best seasons was when you only came back in March and you had a real burst of energy then, and you could sustain that across the season.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this more bluntly than it's fair, but it's me saying this, not you. But I would have thought, for instance, for all the training that the Dubs would have had to do, respectfully to the other counties, there must have been part of you guys on some level thinking, man, we are training our backsides off. We're living like monks here for 8 months of the year, and it's only one game. Maybe against Mayo. That's actually really kind of what we're after. And you meant, look, 2018, no one came close. And you, there must have been part of you thinking, this is not worth 8 months to play one serious proper game. Now, this is a championship structure question, so we won't go too far down that road because it can get boring. Okay. But you know what I mean? Like, there must have been a degree of, like, even in December when your back's flogging yourselves, you must have been thinking, realistically, we're training for one game here in September.
Yeah, like, I that never happened, actually.
Right.
You know, and I think there was enough internal competition, and there was enough respect, you know, and you have to respect your opponents, and the only way you can respect your opponents is by giving them everything you have, like, you know. Yeah. And so that when we got drawn against whoever it was in a Leinster Championship or in a league, whatever it is, or in a Leinster final, we were always kept on our toes, like. And I think it's a lesson from sport around the world. It's a lesson that our management would have always, but it makes just common sense, like, do you know what I mean? You practice, yeah. you give your best, like, well, that's what you don't go out to what time is it? Oh, I have a match at 3 o'clock. I have to go out, and you know what I mean. You go out, you prepare the way you prepare, and then that makes the big games a bit easier because you're in the same mode, you're in the same things, you know. So yeah, the intensity rises outside, but you just stay in it, and like that's what I do a lot of this in work. Like, it's like, yeah, you're trying to get people to inoculate themselves to pressure by treating everything the same as best they can, you know?
Yes.
And I think that's a mindset, whatever.
Give us a trait or traits which jumped out to you of, say, Pat Gilroy, Jim Gavin, for instance, which struck you as impressive or important, or, you know, reasons as to why things did go so well for so many years.
Trade of Pat Gilroy. Pat was always very like dominant. Like, he kind of had a like, this way, follow me kind of, you know, atmosphere with him. Like this is where we're going. Like, come with me kind of thing. And I love that. I remember being very like, what's the word? It's a very basic word. I don't know why I can't, like, intimidated by him a little bit when I came on the panel. Like, he was a very strong character, and I was kind of a bit shy on the team and stuff.
And he's big as well. Like, he's imposing. He's got a presence.
Yeah. Very, this way, follow me, is how I describe him. You know, in the most complimentary way possible, that he knew what he wanted, and he wanted you to come with him, you know.
And that wasn't just because you were a new kid on the block. The older players would have been able to dominate the group, for one. Dominate sounds like an unfair word, but, you know, he had that ability over everybody.
I think so, yeah. Like, and he would be a very good leader. I would see him as a good leader. He's been successful in most things he's done in his life, I believe, in other teams. I've heard did well with the hurlers, and he's done well, you know, stuff. Jim again, geez, I Jim was just very driven, covered all the boxes, and certainly would have had a similar, you know, power over the group, that he was willing to do whatever it took, you know, whatever, like, and he just worked so hard, watched all the footage, was willing to have the conversations with every member of the panel, was willing to get a really good backroom staff. So I can't sum him up as clearly as maybe Gilroy, a driven guy, and was willing to do whatever needed to get over the line. He was very good at, like, he'd take challenge very, very well. You know, he was very good at asking people for feedback and stuff, and never batted an eyelid. I remember one day I said to him in front of the group, and, like, I was like, shh, like, if I said that to 1,000 other people, they'd, you know, take me aside and go, don't, not that I would speak to someone disrespectfully, but, you know, a direct challenge to a leader is, and he's like, he would treat it as feedback and say, okay, what can we do, and how can we learn and grow from it? Like, there was no ego involved. It was let's bring the team up. So he's a fella I greatly admire. Same, and I know you didn't ask, but same with Desi, a fella that, again, a slightly different character, but very understanding of the player, but very very driven as well, and wants to do as best he can for the players, and wants them to be the best they can be on and off the field, wants them to be successful. So it'd be interesting to see how the next period goes for sure.
That's impressive on Gavin's part, take challenges like that and genuinely welcome them and take them in the right way, because very easy to be like, no, I'm in charge here, I know what I'm doing. They did an interview with Dennis Walsh. Go on.
It probably sounds a bit like that he was, he didn't suffer fools. If it came from the right place, he was willing to listen, I guess. Yeah.
If Kevin McMenamin says it, I'll listen. Rest of you chumps, no. Because he did an interview with Dennis Walsh recently, and like it was a bit ahead of the, I must have been 19 final, and it was all about how like they met the day before the All-Ireland bloody final to plan what happens if it goes to a draw and a replay. And it was like, this is what's going to happen. They had like people ready in the stands to give the players massages in case it was a draw. Food was ready to be carted in. There were text messages that would go to all the parents to say, look, the gala thing is cancelled tonight, but you're still invited to dinner, but the players will be in a separate room. And so when the bloody draw happens, all of this stuff is like ready to go. And I don't know, not many are preparing for an All-Ireland final and taking that many, like that's, you're down the list of boxes there if you're at that crack. So that was a little eye opener if he's planning for that.
Yeah, I was supposed to, I remember being supposed to be going to Croatia myself a few days later. I hadn't planned for the replay. And look, that's a testament to how prepared he was. I don't know, was he have texts ready and masseuses ready or whatever it is, but defo there was there would have been contingency plans for what do we do if, you know.
Yeah.
He was and his management team, it's not the Jim Gavin show, I'm sure, as he'd say, but he had people well prepared, and we would have never known that. You know, we wouldn't know what they were doing the day before, you know.
Yeah. A last one, because I've taken up enough of your time. I know you said there it was very easy to become all consumed by being a Dublin GA player, but it always, I think, struck people from afar that you had plenty of other things going on, your music, and you've gone and done a master's in sports psychology. I mean, you're with the bloody Olympians last year. That's no small feat. They're not taking on just anybody to work with their Olympians at the Olympics. So it seems like professionally you've really found something that you're passionate about, that you're obviously good at. And that's kind of an exciting journey to be kind of really cracking on with now over the next 10, 15 years, hopefully, I presume.
Yeah, 100%. I really have enjoyed it. It's been just a great break. Even it's gas, you're still working in sport, but it is a great break from football. So I've a bit of time now to plug into my own business. I'm studying organizational psychology at the minute in DCU, and I'm as a part-time, just to try and add a little bit more of a, just to broaden the net a little bit from just sport. I've been doing a bit outside of sport in the last few years, but I just want to have a bit more theoretical solidity behind what I'm doing. So I'm studying for a master's, but no, love it. Love the mind, I guess, and learn about it. So that's been great. It's been a great break. Music has been phenomenal. Play with my brother once a week still. I missed it a lot during COVID. It's been great to be back. I play in Devitt's every Sunday night, and it's something that it was always good. I used to do it in Temple Bar, because no one really from Ireland used to drink in there. You know, it was mainly tourists and stuff. But it's exciting. I'm gonna crack on with the business. A couple of little bits that I'm really, really excited about coming forward down the track. So whether it's sport or whether it's organizational stuff, I'm excited to get stuck into it, you know.
Brilliant. Well, listen, best of luck with that. Congrats on the career. I mean, that's fairly phenomenal. Just the 8 All-Irelands, Kevin McManaman, congrats. And I'm sure lots of Dubs fans will be wishing you well and success in the future. So thanks so much.
Thanks very much. Appreciate you having me on.